So welcome to our webinar, COVID-19, Are You Ready to Reopen? This webinar is brought to you by the Alberta Community and Cooperative Association and the BC Cooperative Association, with some special guests from the Northern Alberta Institute of Technology's Centre for Applied Disaster and Emergency Management. My name is Jackie Sargent, and I'm the Manager of Communications and Strategic Partnerships for ACCA. So during our presentation, our guests may be referring to the post-COVID-19 facility reentry guide that was sent to you with the invitation for this webinar. So you may wish to have this document handy, especially if you've started working through the document prior to today's session, and I hope you have. The webinar is going to start with a presentation from our guests, and we're going to go to questions afterwards. Please note that this webinar will be focused on business readiness only. We're not going to be discussing any government policies around either province's relaunch strategies or government response to COVID-19. Attendees should also review the respective province's strategy for information and timelines for business relaunch. So now I'm going to introduce our two guests, Josh Bowen and Tracy Blaine. So Josh is the founding manager of the Center for Applied Disaster and Emergency Management, also known as CADEM, at the Northern Alberta Institute of Technology, aka NAIT. Lots of acronyms today. So prior to joining NAIT in 2017, Josh served 13 years in the Canadian Armed Forces, where he was directly involved in 5 disaster response operations. As a leader on the ground in response to the 2011 Red River flood, the 2013 Southern Alberta floods, and the 2015 Northern Saskatchewan wildfires, as a senior military liaison officer to the province of Alberta during the 2016 Fort McMurray wildfires, and as a lead planner for response to the 2017 BC floods and wildfires. I think he's got a little bit of experience in emergency management disaster response. Joining him today is Tracy Blaine, and she is the portfolio manager, education and training for CADEM. In her role, Tracy serves as the chief instructor and oversees all curriculum development projects. Tracy is an experienced industrial emergency manager and an educator who originally joined NAIT as an instructor in the emergency management program in 2018. Tracy's career in emergency management focused on corporate and industrial settings in the energy sector, delivering comprehensive emergency management programs that focus not only on response and recovery, but also operational and business continuity. She has supported both small and large-scale responses in the Corporate Emergency Operations Center and the Incident Command Post. Originally beginning her professional career in education, Tracy transitioned into emergency management through work in technical writing and instructional design.
So thank you so much, Jackie, for organizing this and making this happen in such a quick time frame, and thank you to everybody for taking time out of your day to come and talk through this. Really where all of this started was talking with a number of different stakeholders saying, how do we actually come back? I mean, there's direction all over the place on what to do to clean high-touch surfaces and what kind of masks you need and all that kind of stuff, but there's nothing really in terms of a comprehensive, if we've left our facility, if we've shuttered it, or if we've stepped away from it, how do we actually come back and restore that? So there was a significant need. And part of that is really that we're adapting to a new normal for now. We understand in Alberta and in BC, there's going to be a phased reentry plan. And there's going to be a process where we actually limit what businesses can open, what types of businesses can open, how much they can open, what services can be made available, and all of those different kinds of things. So really, it's a new normal for now, because we also know that as the public health measures and metrics that everybody's monitoring get confirmed or better understood, that things will change, things will progress. So this is our new normal for now, and what we're going to need to do is understand how we prepare our people, most importantly, and our facilities accordingly. The guide really serves to provide considerations that are needed to return to those facilities under current COVID conditions. And one of the things that the guide is set up to do is really to actually talk through and look through all of the different processes that that are in place and that that need to be brought forward when we're looking at re-entering. Why is that going backwards? So in terms of who the guide is for, if you own or rent or lease or are co-located with another organization, you can use the guide. If you've got a single building or multiple buildings on a campus, much like NAIT or any other polytechnic, this applies. And if you're operating in a single jurisdiction or in multiple jurisdictions, and whether that's at the municipal level or across provincial boundaries or international boundaries, this applies as well. So for anybody who's got the guide open, you'll see that it starts off with some guiding principles. And I'll touch on these really quickly so that we can actually get into a discussion a little bit later on. And really, people are the most important thing, most important resource that we have. So ensuring that your people are able to come back and that your people are taken care of and are kept safe is what needs to drive all decisions. The second most important thing is going to be following the guidance from your public health and jurisdictional authorities. There's a lot of examples in the states where one governor has said, the state is open, and then mayors have said, this city is absolutely not open within the state. So there's some conflict, but understanding what your local jurisdiction is providing in terms of direction is where you really need to go. And if your organization crosses multiple different jurisdictions, then the safest bet is to assume the most restrictive of guidance that applies. We talk about a phased and scaled approach, and really what that under references is that this is going to be a gradual return, and that serves to keep risk low and manageable. Scaling means that not all departments and personnel and services need to be reactivated or restored at the exact same time. Doing everything deliberately and gradually reduces the risk to your people and also to your reputation. I think we all understand that this takes time. It will be a slow turn of the dial rather than a flip of the switch. And then the other piece that we really need to keep in mind is that throughout everything that we're doing, communicate. And I think Jackie will probably do a little dance when I say that. But the real point is, how do you communicate with all of your stakeholders, both those that are internal to your organization, your employees, your volunteers, your board, mayor and council, whatever that happens to be. But also, how do you communicate with your key stakeholders, with your investors, with your clients, with whomever else may be one of those stakeholders? And then how do you communicate with the general public to let them know everything that's going on? I touched on the new normal for now. And I think that we can safely assume that we'll be in a new normal for now, that we'll iterate until such time as there's a vaccine and it's widely distributed and we've got people immunized. So in terms of planning reentry and reopening, there's a few things that we can do. We've outlined five phases, and they are distinct, but there is definitely overlap in the five different pieces that I'll touch on in a couple of minutes. But what we really want to do is set the conditions for success. So deliberate risk-based decision-making is going to be the key to successful reentry and reopening of a facility. Before we get into the first phase, which is confirming safety, we really want to make sure that reentry and reopening are feasible at this current time. So we start off with by convening a reentry planning team, And that really needs to represent a coordinated approach across all departments within your organization. Bringing in those stakeholders to be able to prioritize and align resources is going to be absolutely critical. And one of the most difficult things to align is going to be communication. So make sure that there is a plan, that there is, if your organization has somebody who does communication, make sure that they're brought into that team as well. Next, we get into to asking all the important questions. Can we reopen? Is the facility permitted to reopen? Can we reopen and comply with the public health orders that are in place in terms of physical distancing, mass gathering restrictions, personal protective equipment, those kinds of things, and making sure that they're, all of that is viable and we're able to return. Other questions that need to be asked at this time is if you own a facility, do your tenants need to re-enter and reopen? And how do you work through those processes to ensure that they're set up for success and to reduce your liabilities as well? But also things like, can your employees come back to work? Do they have children that are in that need childcare? Do they have access to the transportation? Do they have loved ones that they're caring for that they can't necessarily leave? So understanding those pieces that we normally do when we're taking care of our people, but we just need to have a heightened understanding of those factors. Everybody's favorite discussion topic is insurance. There's a lot of different types of insurance that don't necessarily cover existing and known risks and hazards. So just connecting with your insurance provider and ensuring that you've got business interruption insurance, that you've got life, health, disability, workers' compensation board, liability insurance that will all cover your reopening under these conditions. And then the last piece in terms of planning reentry is really about reputation management. It can't be stated enough that it would be a critical misstep to open a facility before you have everything in place to ensure a successful reopening. Reputation can be ruined very quickly if somebody gets sick from your facility or an injury results from an early reopening, or if the organization is not being seen as transparent. So ensuring that those communication pieces are there, but also that the safety and life safety pieces are in place is going to be critical. And one thing to remember is that working from home whenever possible is always the best option during a pandemic. So once you've gone through all the questions in there and answered yes, no, yes, no, and put in your mitigating factors, we get into phase one, which is really about confirming safety. So from an occupational health and safety code perspective, it requires that workplaces identify all risks, that we control them, and that we communicate risks to employees and occupants. So understanding the specific risks for COVID include transmission through contact with infected persons, transmission through contact with infected surfaces. There'll be the physical risks associated with your structure and systems within your facility, and then also the psychological and mental health risks associated with fear, uncertainty, and change. And that's something that we're seeing quite heightened right now, as people have been in this normal of staying at home wherever possible, and then looking to now come back to an environment where they're changing again. So that can cause a lot of anxiety and fear within your employees, your team members, but also the clients that you'll be serving and working with. The first checklist that's included And throughout the guide, is there are a lot of checklists that are sort of yes or no. Really, there's more of a discussion to all of the questions that are posed. But we sort of said, you know, have you considered this? Yes. Have you considered it? No. We talk through people first and foremost, always. So we talk through occupational health and safety, leadership. Do you have the right staff and all the staff that you need to be able to reenter? We talk about things like, are you considering using volunteers to support your reentry and reopening? And then a few different pieces about volunteers specifically. And we talk about personal protective equipment or PPE. Then in phase one, we look at really how do you actually reenter your facilities and your equipment? How do you make sure that everything is functioning, that everything is safe, that you have all of the utilities and life safety systems in place, that your amenities are taken care of? One of the things we discovered after Fort McMurray, the wildfire there, was everybody had a refrigerator in their house. It was stocked with food, and they'd been without power for about a month. So if that is a potential condition in one of your facilities, just be aware that it's probably best to lock up that fridge, not even open it, and just throw it out and get a new one. The last part for this phase is about communication and really early, consistent, transparent communication with employees is deemed by a number of different surveys to be the single most important thing to build employee trust, which will actually enable compliance with all the changes that are going through and will make your life a whole lot easier as we go through the change management piece. Phase two talks about restoring essential services. And we start with people, leadership, essential staff, and then really understanding that you have the human resources policies and procedures in place to take care of your people as they look to come back. Next, we talk about facilities, which is safety system inspection, repairing, disinfecting, and replacing equipment, making sure that you have utilities in place, that food services and appliances are addressed, and that you've reconfigured the space to comply with all of the different regulations and systems that are in place. Next is looking at supply and distribution chains, which is something that does get overlooked. A lot of people that I've talked to have essentially reflected on the notion that, well, if I'm able to go back, my supply chain should be already operating and things like that. And that may or may not be true. The other thing to keep in mind is that distribution chain may also not be operating. So connecting them with those key contacts and key stakeholders is absolutely critical at the beginning. We talk about equipment, technology, and work processes. So if you're manufacturing something, how long does it take to get the equipment restarted? How long does it need time to be calibrated? Does it need to be inspected before you're able to get up and running? And I think that's something that we saw in the meatpacking facilities that have been closed down and started to reenter. They actually had to take 2 days before allowing any employees back in to bring the inspectors in to make sure that everything was safe and up and running. So if you have equipment that is similar in terms of requirements, making sure that you've got the time built in to be able to address that. And then the last piece is going to be update or write your business continuity plan. There are a few really good examples of templates. The City of Calgary has one, and there's a link in the document to that. And it gives you essentially the template for businesses or for nonprofits. They have two separate ones, and then fairly easy to follow through. The next phase is communication, and really we talk about three different audiences: your internal audience, which is your leadership team, your employees, including contractors and volunteers, and your board of governors, those kinds of things. Making sure that they know what the plan is, that it's been communicated to them, that they've had some input wherever possible, and that there's a mechanism to address concerns raised by your team. The next is stakeholders, which are your key suppliers, your key contractors, your distributors, any partner organizations, mutual aid organizations, chamber of commerce, those kinds of things that are there. And then if you have any regulatory bodies that you've actually communicated with them and make sure that you're able to open. And last, but definitely not least, is the public, making sure that they understand your plan, that you've communicated to your client saying, we are opening, this is when we're looking at opening, this is what you can expect, so that you're setting those expectations first. One of the things that we know is it's one thing to say that a facility is safe or that a business is safe to enter, and it's entirely another thing to convince people of that. So making sure that you have that constant and outgoing communication is going to be absolutely critical to supporting that effort. And then the last thing to remember is that all communication needs to be audience specific. You're going to send slightly different messages to your board than you would to your employees. And you'll send a different message to your key supply chain members than to the general public. Phase 4 is about bringing everybody back. And it's a really delicate balance. If you return too quickly, you'll appear insensitive or, you know, worse, oblivious to the situation. And if you return too slowly, you may lose key members of your team or market share to other organizations. So it's a tricky balance. But again, you know, our core recommendation is that err on the side of caution and go with people's safety first. Part of people's safety is change management. And really understanding that if you have changed how your facility is laid out to accommodate more spacing, that may actually change things like the fire escape plan for people. So just ensuring that you've got the leadership understands the new policies and procedures that are going to be in place, that you've identified training or playbook or those kinds of materials that people will need to be able to adapt to the new normal for now. And then really leadership needs to be modeling the way and showing what great looks like and then doing the things that we expect of our people. In terms of facilities, by this point, all of the restoration of essential services has been done. Facilities have been inspected, disinfected, and repaired as required. But again, taking time to orient your team to any changes to the facility, including layout, expectations around using certain areas like the lunchroom, and how to help clients navigate these changes is going to be absolutely critical. And this is the part that everybody wants to get to and that we're all excited about, I think. And it's about reopening for business. And the first part is, you need to communicate that you're going to be open for business. And we need to set the expectations. Because I think as we start to get back and reduce some of the restrictions that are put in place, we can expect that people are going to be suspicious of every cough or sneeze, and that people will not react in the same way to everyday occurrences, like a cough or sneeze, that they did prior to the pandemic. So keep this in mind as you're reopening, and ensure that your communication addresses that. We also need to be cognizant of our team. People will need to resume their duties and return to some semblance of normal, but that will take time. And there will likely be apprehension and anxiety about potential exposure to infection for some of your team members. So be patient with them and support them wherever you can. The next piece is understanding the context that people are living in, and that's their families. Not everybody will have childcare, so they may not be able to return, but they'll want to. Not everybody will have the ability to leave family members that they're taking care of. And so, or they may have to work reduced hours those kinds of things. So if you can consider how you can support your employees by considering their families as everybody transitions through the new normal for now, that will be critical to ensuring that mental health piece for your teams. Next is really considering suppliers and distributors. There's going to be a number of challenges that they'll continue to face until such time as the global economy recovers. So, it's about communication and really engaging with those suppliers and distributors. And last but definitely not least is your clients. So the same challenges that your teams will face, your clients will also face. And making sure that you're able to support them and understand and be sympathetic to their situation, because it's also your situation, is going to be absolutely critical. So I think I'll end there with two quick quotes. And the first comes from Peter Neffinger, who's somebody that I've got a chance to get to know and truly admire. And he led the response to the BP Deepwater Horizon oil spill in the Gulf. And he said that all crises come to an end. The actions that we take now will have a profound impact on how we come out of this. And I think by being deliberate and by understanding that people are first and that we need to ensure that we're providing a safe facility for our team and for our clients, that will set us up for success as we go forward. And the second one is from Dr. Gina Hinshaw, who's Alberta's Chief Medical Officer of Health. We've come so far together, and we can stay the course if we lean on each other. With solidarity, generosity, and community, we will overcome this together. And I think that it really speaks to the fact that we're all in this together, and that we have people we can reach out to, lean on, and support. So that's a fairly fast, high-level overview of our guide, but we really want to make sure that we've got time for questions.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Josh. I don't know if many people on the call know, but I do have a bit of a background in pandemic planning, business continuity, emergency and crisis communications, just from my experience in municipal government. So with that lens, what really impressed me about the guide that your group prepared was the workbook component, because it really allows people to work through the process and help them really think through and understand what the guidelines and requirements actually mean. So also helpful is the ability to ask questions. So let's get to that part of our webinar. So we have one in the chat that I think we'll start with. So recommend the guide speak to ensure, so this is a recommendation for your consideration, Josh. Recommend that the guide speak to ensuring team members have a rep or reps at the table, even in non-union environments. Health and safety committees need to be in lockstep and integrated into the decision-making process and business resumption. Do you have any comments on that?
That's absolutely critical. And one of the things, when we look at the composition of the team, the reentry planning team, what we've said is it needs to include leadership, it needs to include HR, communications, and employee representatives, safety leaders, and the departments that are critical to operations. Employees must be engaged in any kind of process, and that needs to be there. And I would argue even more so in a non-union environment, so that all of those considerations and concerns are able to be addressed. And then as we go through the communication element, communication phase of the document, that it does, speak directly to, do you have a plan to address concerns that are raised by employees? Do you have the ability to actually connect with your employees and make sure that they're informed and brought into the decision-making and the discussion? Because I think we all can understand that without our employees to do the work that needs to get done, there's nobody to do the work that needs to get done. So we really need to understand and support them as we go through. So yeah, thank you, Stephen. That's a great, great point.
So I just want everybody to know that I did not pay Josh to speak so broadly and often about communications. and I'm thrilled that it's such a key component because it really is true. And really, communications is such a strategic business partner for your organization. So just wanted to thank Josh for bringing that up. I think one point about communications, though, and I made this comment on somebody else's thread on LinkedIn, and that's the fact that you kind of need to put people into three camps, and you sort of alluded to this. You've got people who believe that we're doing this too soon. We've got people who believe we didn't do it soon enough, and we've got people that believe we've done it just right. It's basically a Goldilocks and the Three Bears type scenario. So I think really that we need to kind of customize some of your messaging for your internal staff as well as your customers to kind of phrase it around, you know, what are they thinking and how are they feeling and how can I address that with my messaging.
Okay, if I can add one more thing in on this topic here. This is Tracy for the New Voice in the Conversation. One of the other considerations with that communication and engaging employees on this reentry is some way of gauging their ability to reenter. So it could be, I mean, everybody loves or hates those questionnaires, but some way to find out from your staff, right, directly, each individual, what is their capability of returning to work? Josh touched on this briefly, but if the schools are still out, if your daycare is closed, if you're caring for someone with health issues, be that a parent or a child or your spouse, maybe you're not in a position to be able to return at this point in time. And if you as the company have a very large percentage of that staff, it will directly impact your ability to reenter. So you need that data.
That's an excellent comment, Tracy. When I was working in municipal government and developing crisis communications plan for Municipal Emergency Operations Center, one of the things that I asked to be implemented was basically a check-in sheet. So I don't know if anybody knows, but when a municipality goes into a major emergency situation, usually it's all hands on deck into the emergency operations center. You drop whatever you're doing at your desk and you just flee into this other room and deal with it. And quite often we're so laser focused on that situation that we kind of forget what's going on even in our own periphery. So I requested a checklist that basically went, as soon as somebody came into the EOC, they were handed it and it was like, do you have children at home that need to be taken care of? Do you have pets at home? Do you have any other considerations that need to be dealt with that maybe we can help you with or that we may need to relieve you quicker? So it's kind of like a variation of that. So what do your employees need in order to be able to come back and help you in your work environment? So we've got another question in our chat box. Just when we really need to pull things together under pressure, we're struggling with focus and self-discipline, maybe a sense of panic. Oh, yes. How can we get ourselves and others to calm down and learn important procedures and make plans, especially if working remote from one another? Tracy and Josh, I let you guys take this one.
This is such a common scenario. One of the groups that I work with calls it going into the basement. When we get that reptile brain that just hijacks our entire thought process and we go into freeze, flight, fight, in that order, and we're sort of captivated by what's going on as opposed to being able to get up into that higher level of thinking and actually work through the process. So there's a few different things that you can do. First and foremost is recognize that you're overwhelmed and recognize that you are not responding the way you necessarily want to respond. And as soon as you do that, your brain starts working the way that, you know, the higher order thinking wants to work, and that starts taking over and saying, right, what are the processes that I can do? What do I know that I can focus on? And having a phrase or something that really gets you out of that, that freeze, flight, fight mentality, pardon me, is really what's going to going to be able to support. So I know some people will sort of look down at their feet and say, your feet are firmly planted on the ground, you can do this. And that's just enough of a clue or enough of a trigger to get people to start thinking through the process. I know people that will tap their index finger and their thumb together a number of times, and that's that physical tactile cue to say, right, you're stressed, start coming out of it and work yourself out of it. So there are a few different things that you can do. One of the phrases that I love is what's important now, or WIN, W-I-N. And I know a number of people that will just write that quickly on their hand, just on the back of their thumb, so that they can look down and say, right, what is important now? What do I need to focus on? And how do I actually get myself out of it? Because as leaders, which you know, everybody is a leader, or has the opportunity to be a leader, if you can pull yourself out of the basement quickly, or at least in a methodical fashion, you'll be able to start pulling the people that are around you, even remotely, out of that basement as well. And so it can be as simple as turning on a video chat with somebody and saying, hey, I'm feeling this. It's causing me stress. I want to be able to get out of it. Can we chat for a couple of seconds? And then seeing the other person, recognizing that you're going through that, will really help bring both people and larger organizations out of the basement and up to the higher level thinking and able to function.
Thanks, and that tool for managing stressful situations is training, is practice. It's why in emergency response, people practice over and over and over again, so it becomes something you don't have to think about. It's a reflex. So if you have a training department with your group, as you're implementing new procedures, new plans, different processes, work with that training department to try to simplify the task as much as possible, give people lots of opportunities to practice that new procedure or process before they have to do it, and then regularly revisit it until this becomes just another skill. It's something they know how to do and they just do it. It can be something as simple as, what if a customer calls, right? How do you manage that? Or what are your cleaning procedures? Any of the things you have to put in place for your organization. But if you can leverage some good adult learning techniques and do some very simple training to just cause this to become a reflex, that will help with that stress as well.
Thanks, Tracy and Josh. I just want to add to that a little bit. We often talk about communications, and people assume that if they're sending out messages, they're communicating. And the other part of it, though, is listening. And that's probably one of the key components of what we need to do in this particular stage. And that's really listen and empower. People are struggling right now because they're dealing with a situation that they're not familiar with. They have no control over. So if there's an opportunity to pull your team together and start working through some of the components of the workbook that Nate has put together and have them kind of be involved in the process to protect themselves and the organization, then they own it and they become involved in it, and that might help them with implementing it as you go forward. Just my two cents. So we have some questions that were submitted in advance. Some of our members operate retail outlets that have been classified as essential services, for example, grocery stores, agriculture supply stores, and they've basically been operating since this all began. So what considerations or advice would you have for them moving forward under the new relaunch strategies?
Yeah, I can jump on this first, and then I know that Tracy has got some great advice on this one. Really, it goes back to that gradual phase turning of the dial. Right now we're in a position where, people are being told go to a grocery store once a week, wear a mask, all of those kinds of things. The grocery store that I go to, there's great signs saying, now is not the time to squeeze fruit, to determine if it's right. If you touch it, take it. That's some fantastic guidance and messaging for people. But if you remained open for the past several weeks or you haven't closed down at all, you've already gone through a lot of these kinds of things, you know, understanding how you're going to, how you do cleaning and all of those other things that you are directed by the public health authority, making sure that you've got those processes in place. And as we expect a gradual reduction in restrictions, we can also expect a ramping up of clients and customers coming into our stores and areas. And so ensuring that you're adapting and that you've got the right processes in place and that you've got adequate supplies to ensure that cleaning is there. Taking the opportunity to remind people that, yes, even though, I don't know, in Alberta, bars are open again, or whatever it happens to be, that doesn't mean that the 2-meter physical distancing is not still in place. So make sure that those are in place. Make sure that the signage is still there. If you need to add signs, as we expect more people to come back, or even have employees just standing there to remind people that, these aisles are one way, those kinds of things. Communication is going to be absolutely critical and having multiple opportunities to be able to connect with people and just reinforce that, yes, this is a safe place to come, that it is, that you know, we're still providing a healthy and safe environment is going to be absolutely critical.
Josh covered a lot of the items I was going to suggest. I would look at, from a contract operations perspective, I would really look at your supply chain. If you have been operating, new demands are about to hit the supply chain. So just because you've been able to get your cleaning supplies up until now, as Josh mentioned, make sure you have enough, but are you going to still be able to get them, or is your shipping time going to increase? Which of your vendors that you have been doing without but are hoping to be able to rebuild the relationship with, maybe you're no longer in business. So really looking at your before COVID supply chain systems and what still works and what might now be different, have a plan in place for that. I would also look at, depending on your business, whether or not you may need to hire some temporary or increased security if you're concerned about additional clientele or the way people will manage restrictions if they're going to be put in more long-term. So you may or may not need that, but depending on where you are, sometimes a little bit more of a security presence there will assist. It may also inflame a situation. So you need to know your business and your community for those types of things. And then we had talked about revisiting or making a business continuity plan, but what are your considerations around your staff that is able to come back should someone in that situation now become ill or injured? Or I always like win the lottery and move to Hawaii better than get hit by a bus. What if something should happen to staffing if you're already at critically low levels? Also having a policy in place as you go longer term, this would be for everybody, around those seasonal cold issues, what's your new policy if someone comes in with a simple, you know, it's an annual cold. It really is nothing you would have ever thought about before. Are you going to have a no-work policy? How does that kick in with your benefits? All those pieces. And for those of you who have been operating, share your knowledge. Share what you've learned with those who are about to go back in, because you've, as Josh said, you've already had to work through a lot of this. So what's worked really well? What didn't work? And so don't even bother trying it. And then considering what might change as increased demands on that supply chain are about to happen.
Those are excellent comments, Tracy. Thank you so much. So some of our businesses have adjusted to life under COVID and they've found new approaches to keep operating even under restrictions. Is there a need for them to return to previous business practices, for example, just opening their doors to customers when they've been basically online curbside pickup, or is there a benefit to continue to wait it out?
I think that it entirely depends on the organization and the appetite for risk. You know, this kind of event really gives us an opportunity to identify what is our core purpose? Why do we exist? Why do we do the things that we do? And why did we do them the way that we did? If there's a better way to do things, that was a great opportunity to actually change. I know some organizations were looking at, you know, a 4-year transformation strategy that's now being rolled out in 3 months, because, you know, they were looking and saying, right, we want to have employees work from home, or give them the option, and the employees all said, no, that's never going to work. And these last 8-9 weeks have proven that it can work. And a lot of people are actually saying, I'm far more productive at home, and I'm able to get a lot more done in the day. So maybe this is a good thing. So if there are opportunities to actually, to capitalize on some of the changes that have been made and some of the things that have enabled you to remain successful, I would say absolutely capitalize on them. The other thing to remember is that just because you are able to come back and able to reopen to the public doesn't mean that you have to, right? It's really about doing that risk-informed decision-making as we go forward.
Awesome. Thank you. So we have another question that was submitted in advance. So much of the focus has really been on the reopening of retail business and personal care services. I know for one, I can't wait until my hairdresser reopens, but at the same time, I'm also waiting to see what her protective measures are. But what are considerations for office-based businesses where people have been working from home for the past several weeks? What should they be doing to prepare people to bring back into the office environment? I know you mentioned that working from home and continue to explore that, but you know, some of them do want to bring people back into the fold, and some people simply do not like to work from home. They're more extroverted. So thoughts on that question?
I think a lot of that has to do with your office structure. If you are in cubicle land, which more and more companies are, then you very quickly have to address whether or not the physical distance requirements are met, and you may have to adjust them. I myself am in a shared office, so it would not meet the physical requirements. Josh has his own office, so he'd be okay. You have all the different variants on people's family lives, and so if you're in a position to make it an option for people, adapting your space to meet the physical requirements, and then allowing those that want to come back. Again, you need that data. Who wants to come back? Who's good where they are? Who has to come back? Even in an office setting, you may have some roles that really do need to require, they need to be at the office. They need access to certain things. And then allowing the physical spacing to do that. If you are in some of the very forward-looking cubicle designs that I know my previous work in corporate head offices were talking about, of not having assigned workspaces, of having more everything set up at the hotel station, cancel that. I would say you need to assign people you're in this spot for now. That's where, you know, to keep that transfer and the cleaning requirements maybe a little bit easier then, rather than anybody can jump on any workstation. I have a friend who is a commercial real estate individual in Calgary, and they are absolutely convinced that that market is in for big trouble. That what this has proven, as Josh was saying, this has proven a shift in how we can work. And in a lot of organizations, it's working very, very well. I know for my job, I'm working from home just fine. I'm designing courses at home, designing courses in the office. Doesn't make a difference on that aspect. So the need for that space may also change for a business. Maybe you as a company decide, you know, we can actually reduce our space by half. We don't need everybody in the office. We need our people, but in a different way. I think it would honestly have more to do with looking at those physical requirements and then looking at how you run your business. If you're going to continue to allow this, if it's going to work within your model, I heard today Google and I think Twitter have made this a permanent option for their staff now. If this is that, then as a management leadership team in your organization, you need to shift how you manage work. I come from some traditional management styles in in more industrial settings where a bum in a seat, that's what they're looking for. If we're allowing people that option of working from home, we can't manage that way anymore. So how do we shift that mindset on productivity and deliverables and timelines rather than hours in front of the screen?
Excellent comments, Tracy. I think I've used that before as we really need to do that change management strategy of management by productivity and expectations rather than how many hours you're sitting in a particular chair. So we're getting close to wrapping up our time here, but I do have one last really quick question for both of you, and that would be if you could pass one quick word of advice to all of those people participating today, what would it be? 1 minute each.
Tracy, I'll let you go first.
Oh, I have to think.
Okay. I can jump in next.
Okay.
The most important thing from my perspective is take care of yourself. Take care of your physical health, your mental health. Everybody on your team will be looking to you to be that leader, which is, you know, something I think most of us have sought. So take care of your personal, physical, and mental health, because people are going to be looking to you. And if you're taking care of yourself, you'll be able to take care of your people.
That leads nicely into my suggestion, which is take care of your people. You know your team, so know their capabilities, take the time to listen to their concerns, and then work with them. And if you have to go and fight on their behalf to leadership, to change a mentality, to change an approach, to change an expectation so that your people are able to do what's right for them and their family and still continue to work, then be prepared to have those conversations and to be a voice for change on their behalf or to be there to support them in whatever they're needing. People who feel safe and cared for, they're going to work harder. They're going to come there for you.
That's excellent. Thank you so much. Josh and Tracy, I can't thank you enough for your time today. From all of us at ACCA and BCCA and our members, thank you so much for your insights and for your advice to our members.